Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, June 11th. As stocks continue to tank, in terms of economic data, it was a quiet week around the globe, but for starters, the next 2 weeks promised to be fun, or not. To wit, next week in the U.S. we have the inflation data, plus figures on retail sales, industrial production, housing starts, and the LEI, the leading economic indicators. The following week is going to be dominated by home sales, durable goods data, and an all-important Federal Open Market Committee meeting. Globally, you'll see similar data, plus a critical European Union summit June 23rd, 24th, at which time the fate of Greece is to be decided. Maybe. Meanwhile, the clock is ticking on the U.S. debt ceiling extension, this as the country's finances deteriorate further. The new deadline for action appears to be August 15th, the day Treasury must make $25 billion in payments on more than $1 trillion worth of securities. But I can guarantee you that if this issue isn't resolved by August 1st, the markets will be even more unsettled than they are now. Here are some depressing figures, courtesy of Dennis Koshan of USA Today. The federal government's financial condition deteriorated rapidly last year, far beyond the $1.5 trillion in new debt taken on to finance the budget deficit, a USA Today analysis shows. The government added $5.3 trillion in new financial obligations in 2010, largely for retirement programs such as Medicare and Social Security. That brings to a record $61.6 trillion the total of financial promises not paid for. Medicare alone took on $1.8 trillion in new liabilities, more than the record deficit, prompting heated debate between Congress and the White House over lifting the debt ceiling. Social Security added $1.4 trillion in obligations, partly reflecting longer life expectancies. Federal and military retirement programs added more to the financial hole, too. Corporations would be required to count these new liabilities when they are taken on and report a big loss to shareholders. Unlike businesses, however, Congress postpones recording spending commitments until it writes a check. That was USA Today. As Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke said this week in a speech, policymakers urgently need to put the federal government's finances on a sustainable trajectory. Not that we need a gentle Ben to tell us this. It's just that Americans are split on what to do, according to a new Washington Post ABC News poll. 55% of Democrats and half of Republicans and independents support a debt limit deal that includes a steep reduction in the size of government. But then 37% of Republicans, a third of independents, and a fifth of Democrats say they are against raising the debt limit under any circumstances. Just this week, Fitch Ratings became the latest to warn that even a brief default would hurt the nation's cherished AAA credit rating, and that Fitch would downgrade affected U.S. securities to junk bond status in the extremely unlikely event that U.S. officials failed to make scheduled payments. Meanwhile, this week the Fed released its latest beige book on regional economic activity and spoke of an economy that was expanding at a, quote, steady pace, though consumer spending was mixed. Chairman Bernanke spoke of a frustratingly slow recovery, but offered the economy would pick up in the second half. Nonetheless, Bernanke said the economy still needs stimulus, not necessarily a QE3 to follow an expiring QE2, but rather to keep accommodative monetary policies as in interest rates near zero, as in keep screwing savers. It's funny how poorly economists have done in predicting economic activity. For example, the February survey of economists for the Wall Street Journal had the U.S. economy growing at a 3.5% clip in the first half, and now we've had a 1.8% GDP print for the first quarter and anywhere from a 2 to 3% projected second quarter number. Not exactly 3.5. A Bloomberg survey released this week takes a look at the second half, and 67 economists project activity for the July through December period at 3.2%. These same ladies and gentlemen are also calling for 2.3% growth in Q2, when they were forecasting 3.3% for the quarter just last month. So is the economy experiencing more than a soft patch? If you listen to the experts, a 3 to 3.5% growth rate is always just around the corner. But we need even more than that to finally begin to put a real dent in the unemployment rate, and that's just not in the cards anytime soon. One thing President Obama could do right now to help stimulate activity is to pass the free trade agreements with Colombia, Panama, and South Korea. These three are rightly furious that nothing is being done on this front. George Will, Washington Post, quote, "Because government is inherently dangerous and often mischievous, the Constitution's framers provided and congressional rules have multiplied mechanisms for blocking government action. These mechanisms can, however, also be used to force action. One is being so used in a dispute that has two remarkable facets. President Obama is sacrificing economic growth and job creation in order to placate organized labor. And as the crisis of the welfare state deepens, he is trying to enlarge the entitlement system and exacerbate the entitlement mentality. 44 Republican senators, three more than necessary to stop Senate action, have vowed to block confirmation of John Bryson, the president's nominee to be Commerce Secretary, until the president submits for congressional approval the already negotiated free trade agreements with South Korea, Panama, and Colombia. The 44 are responding to this. On May 4th, the administration announced that, at last, it was ready to proceed with congressional ratification of the agreements. On May 16, however, it announced it would not send them until Congress expands an entitlement program favored by unions." Close quote. It's about trade adjustment assistance that since 1974 has provided all manner of help to those who can claim to have lost their jobs as a result of foreign competition. But it's an entitlement that cost $975 million in 2010 for 234,000 workers, and now the administration is looking to expand it further by including TAA in its policy of increased spending everywhere. George Will. "Reactionary liberalism holds that existing jobs must be protected with policies that reduce the economic dynamism that would mean a net increase in American jobs. So the dreary probability is that even if the TAA entitlement were re-enriched to stimulus levels, Democrats would again move the goalposts, concocting new objections to the trade agreements. Most Democrats oppose such agreements but lack the courage to express their controlling conviction, which is organized labor, which represents just 6.9% of the private sector workforce, must be appeased, even if doing so injures other American workers or Americans who would be workers if policies such as TAA did not impede economic dynamism." That was George Will. Turning to Europe and the euro debt crisis, as noted earlier, we are 2 weeks away from a critical EU summit that is to decide the fate of Greece, among other issues. There have been large protests in Athens as the people cry enough when it comes to the country's wrenching austerity program. Unemployment rose to 16.2% in March, the latest data point, and of those under age 24, the rate is 42.5%. Under an expanded bailout plan for Greece, as currently under discussion for the summit, Greece would be lent an additional $65 billion by European governments and the IMF. As noted in Bloomberg, European estimates now put Greece's 2012-2014 financing gap at as much as 170 billion euros. It would be filled by the loans, plus around 57 billion euros in unspent aid from last year's bailout, roughly 30 billion euros in asset sale proceeds, and about 30 billion euros in rollovers by creditors. Well, it's the rollover portion that has become the prime issue. "Extending maturities in this fashion," warns European Central Bank President Jean-Claude Trichet, "could be tantamount for rating agencies to a default." Last year at this time, the ECB bailed out the politicians by lending Greece and then Ireland the lion's share of the funds, along with the IMF. Now the ECB is saying, hey, it's time for the supporting governments to pony up. We've already done our part, meaning the politicians have to ask their taxpayers to help out Greece. At the same time, Trichet said on a different matter, the prospects for inflation, that he's raising interest rates in July, regardless of what this will mean for the sick puppies of the EU. As for Britain, which is already in the midst of its own austerity plan, the IMF urged the government to stick to its program, despite the significant risk the economy could double dip. But when it comes to austerity, as the Brits know better than anyone, it's about leadership and bucking the people up. After all, what the Brits went through during the Battle of Britain, with people spending long stretches hunkered down in the subways, was far worse than anything they are facing today. But it takes leadership to get the people to understand this, be it in London, Lisbon, Athens, or Dublin. But then Europe has this E. coli outbreak, with the last word 33 dead and 3,000 sickened, hundreds severely so. One thing is clear, even if the source has not always been, the performance of the German government and health officials has been pathetic. In about 10 days, we have gone from the source being cucumbers from Spain to bean sprouts, back to cucumbers, and now back to bean sprouts from northern Germany. I mentioned last week that officials and farmers in Spain were furious that they were initially assigned all the blame, which led to an immediate boycott of its products. Now the European Union is putting together an aid package for farmers that have been hurt of 300 million, which by some estimates barely covers Spain's losses for a week. And one other note on Germany and its healthcare system. One victim of the E. coli, Nicoletta Pabst, woke up with severe stomach cramps and diarrhea at her Hamburg home, and when other symptoms emerged, she and her husband arrived at the emergency room of the University Medical Center in Hamburg-Eppendorf. They were shocked by the scene. All patients suspected of E. coli were led to a separate location for examination, remembered Pabst. When I arrived, there were at least 20 other people, and more kept coming in, many of them by ambulance. The sanitary conditions in the emergency room were abhorrent. All of us had diarrhea, and there was only one bathroom each for men and women. It was a complete mess, she said. If I hadn't been sick with E. coli by then, I probably would have picked it up over there. After 3 hours, Pabst was told she could go home because her blood levels didn't indicate kidney failure. That was from Kirsten Grieshaber of the AP. Finally, just a word on commodities. The CRB index finished down fractionally on the week as gold, silver, and oil were among the losers, but wheat and corn were in the win column, the latter two primarily because of the spring rains and flooding that severely impacted the planting season. Corn hit a record as the U.S. Department of Agriculture projected that stockpiles will continue to fall and inventories will approach 1996 levels before the 2012 harvest. In Northern Europe, it's about drought. France, Europe's breadbasket, is experiencing its worst drought in 30 years, and the Danube River, one of Europe's important waterways, has seen volume in some parts dropped at 100-year lows. So that is impacting businesses and the shipping of grains and iron ore. But I would suggest that while it's pretty apparent how the 2011 harvest may pan out in parts of the U.S., globally it's not too late yet. For example, remember the drought in China? It's over, baby. Like, way over. Like, try tons of people drowning in raging floodwaters in the once dry Yangtze River Basin. Here I thought the China agriculture minister I quoted the other day, who said the drought would be history shortly, was spinning tall tales. Au contraire, mon frère. I don't know Mandarin. Yes, it's a changing world, sports fans. Last week I reiterated the importance of waiting 24 hours before making any sweeping pronouncements. 24 to 48 hours after I posted my piece, a lot had already changed from Wienergate to Yemen. The Dow Jones and S&P 500 fell for a sixth straight week. NASDAQ had 1 week in a stretch where it gained a single point. Amidst continued concerns on the global economy as well as ongoing euro fears, since the April highs, the Dow is off 6.7% and the S&P 6.8%. NASDAQ is now down for the year, minus 0.3%. That's all for this week. I'll be back with you next Saturday. Have a great one. For further information, go to stocksandnews.com. Click on Week in Review. Have a great one. Take care.